Good morning, all. The first case for argument this morning is the Union Pacific Railroad versus the Chicago Transit Authority. Mr. Friedman.
Good morning, and may it please the Court. I am Richard Friedman, the attorney for the Chicago Transit Authority, the defendant appellant here. This case arises out of the efforts of the CTA to own rather than rent its right to use the 2.8-mile right-of-way, which now runs the Green Line or the Lake Street Elevated. That right-of-way is owned by the Union Pacific, and the Union Pacific sued to stop the CTA from acquiring its rights by condemnation. Does forcing a change in the way that the CTA pays for its trackage rights amount to a prohibited regulation of railroads? To put it another way, is the CTA's proposed condemnation, because it's a condemnation, preempted under the Interstate Commerce Commission Termination Act? To look at that question, we obviously look at the words of the ICC Termination Act, specifically 49 U.S.C. Section 10501B. It states that the jurisdiction of the Surface Transportation Board over transportation by rail carriers is exclusive. Now, we don't contest here that what the acquisition of these lease rights involves transportation and involves that section of the statute. But there's another sentence in the same section that we think does apply here, and that is that the remedies provided with respect to regulation of rail transportation are exclusive and preempt the remedies provided under federal or state law. So the question is condemnation and is the acquisition of these lease rights a regulation of rail transportation?
Can I ask a preliminary question? Is there any case that you can cite where the lessee is using condemnation in order to acquire some right?
I'm not aware of any reported decision.
I'm not either. And I think this is really unusual.
Well, there is one case where they taught the I think it was the Park case, the D.C. versus 100,000 acres square feet of land, where it was spoken of as an easement for a park purpose. But this is simply an acquisition of the rights that the CTA is now paying for every month and wishes to own with a single outright payment.
This actually take off on Judge Mannion's question. This really is started out as a rent dispute, didn't it?
Well, that is one of...
You've been renting this for so long, and apparently they wanted more than you wanted to pay, so you bring...
Well, that's certainly one of the issues. The issue is how much should be paid for, what's the market value of these rights. And it also has to do with CTA's internal method of payment. There's testimony on the record that the CTA wishes to use capital rather than operating funds. That would be an advantage to the CTA.
But wouldn't it also could be flip it over, though? It's also going to be a sale of capital asset as opposed to monthly income for the train, for the railroad.
That could be a factor for the railroad. There is not anything in the record, I think, that bears on that question. But the
you were going along so many years on this perpetual lease arrangement, and something happened that either they wanted more money, you didn't want to pay more, or something that triggered this whole, got this ball rolling down the hill.
Well, that's clearly right. There is a provision for a decennial reassessment of the value of the property and at the same time the amount of money that should be paid for the lease. And there were substantial raises. In the early years, the early 30 or 40 years of this lease, they were moderate raises. In the last one, it was a very substantial raise, which made the CTA think about whether they wanted to pay rent in that amount or might be more economic for it to acquire those rights and pay one payment determined to be market value in a condemnation court, and then that would be the end of it. There are a lot of other reasons, too, to own rather than pay rent.
Yeah, but those reasons would have existed for a long, long time.
That's correct.
So,
But in any case, this was the determination of the CTA board that it would be more advantageous to this public body to own rather than rent. The negotiations, and obviously under Illinois law, to acquire, there has to be an attempt to agree, and all that failed, and resulted in the condemnation suit, which begins in Illinois in the Illinois Commerce Commission.
You refer to a public, public entity. What is this self-sustaining CTA, or is it you get a lot of money from the government, or what?
The CTA has two kinds of funds. One are operating funds that come from the fare box, of course, and the other are grants from both the Federal Transportation Administration and the state government. So generally operating funds would come from the fare box, and the other kind of funds would come from the federal or state government.
So there could be a big impact if, Illinois, they talk about maybe bankruptcy for cities and states and things like that. I'm not sure who that would benefit, frankly. If somebody has a lump sum up front and it's over with, they may not be able to get cut back. So maybe an outright sale would be
that might benefit the railroad.
I just wondered, but it is a substantially subsidized by the government at some levels.
To the extent that the fare box does not provide all operating expenses, that's certainly true, and that's generally been the case over the years.
Okay, thanks.
Is there a remedy to go to Congress? Let's assume that there is federal preemption here, per se preemption. Is there a remedy for you to go to Congress and get them to carve out an exception to the federal preemption of a situation like yours?
Well, I suppose that would be a big move if we attempted to do that in Congress. What the seems to me that the result that carry out the district court's decision to its fullest extent would mean that maybe there is no condemnation. Either all condemnation, because it's per se preempted, doesn't exist. I think that's the position of the amicus curiae state of Illinois. Or, at the very least, one would have to appear before the Surface Transportation Board. And I don't know whether Congress intended that every railroad crossing dispute, every condemnation suit should be before the Surface Transportation Board. But that seems to be the logical result of saying that, as the district court did, every condemnation, because it's condemnation, no matter how trivial, is going to be preempted and per se preempted.
They didn't go that far. I wondered about that. You say, well, it's all or nothing. I thought that when you were talking about same grade easements or you condemn whatever, it's really very routine. I know you're arguing against this, but this certainly is not a common everyday transaction.
No, it's not routine, but when one says per se, that means because it is condemnation, it's in that category. Every condemnation, big or small, simply because it is condemnation, is preempted. And that seems to be the logical conclusion of the first part of Judge Dow's opinion. And that clearly is not what at least the Surface Transportation Board and other circuits have held. They've held that there are only two categories of per se preemption. One is permitting or preclearance, which is not here, or encroaching on the traditional jurisdiction of the Surface Transportation Board, which is rates, routes, and construction and operation and abandonment of rail lines. So condemnation falls into neither of those categories. And this has been really the consistent ruling of the Surface Transportation Board in analyzing these cases. And it seems to me every of the reported cases, whether it talks about preempted or not, every single one of the reported cases talks about the measure of determining when preemption occurs, and that is, in different words, but whether the action proposed prevents or unreasonably interferes with railroad transportation.
Is that distinction as applied as opposed to per se?
We're saying that's what a court should evaluate rather than saying just, well, it looks like it's condemnation, therefore it is preempted.
Well, is this come into a category as an as-applied preemption?
We think the test is as-applied. We think it, when one applies the test, it is not preempted. It does not reach the level of preventing or interfering with railroad transportation, clearly not. And I'd like to address that particular question and state that in order to evaluate that, you have to look at the lease provisions as they exist today and the relationship to the railroad if this proposed condemnation goes ahead. And as the CTA has worded its acquisition, it says that the CTA wishes to acquire its rights in the lease coextensive with the lease, and rights that are in which the CTA succeeds to its obligations and succeeds to its rights. In other words, in almost every respect, what the CTA wishes to acquire is exactly what it has now and what the railroad gave up 50 years ago voluntarily. And let me describe some of the operating...
Well, the lease would be over, though.
Clearly, the lease would be over,
yeah,
but...
You have an easement, then, new, that would be perpetual.
It would be... Obviously, the lease as a lease would not exist, but the rights that are within that lease would continue because the CTA says it is acquiring rights coextensive with the lease. CTA says it will subsume its obligations, it would assume... take its both its rights and obligations as they exist. So today, the CTA, for example, can't build anything on its own portion of the right-of-way without getting written approval from the railroad, and that's going to be the case in the future. Those are the rights that we are accepting. Today, the CTA only owns the owns or has the right to use the surface of that embankment. It does not have the right to use the overhead. It does not have the right to use the underground. Those are both valuable rights for pipelines or other lines or signaling. If the condemnation is permitted, that relationship is not going to change. The railroad will continue to own those rights above and below the right-of-way. So the railroad raised the question of safety, and it's clear that for 50 years these trains have been operating in quite close proximity. That safety is not going to change. Because the CTA acquires these rights, the trains aren't going to move any closer, and the CTA cannot today nor tomorrow could it move its tracks without permission of the railroad. So it seems to me the question of safety is really not a valid issue.
What about the question of volume of traffic, Mr. Friedman? Would that possibly be impacted? Could the CTA change its traffic pattern in such a way as to impact the Union Pacific?
I suppose that's possible. There's nothing in the agreement today or tomorrow that says talks about the amount of traffic, but it clearly says any changes in the facilities are going to be subject to the written approval of the railroad, and we expect that to remain the same. We think the court below was mistaken both in determining that this was per se preemption, as well as in its analysis of the impact, which is very minimal on the railroad. So we're asking that the court below be reversed, or at the very least that this case be remanded for the hearing of evidence on that issue.
Thank you, Mr. Friedman. Mr. Andreoli?
Good morning. May it please the Court. Tom Andreoli on behalf of the Union Pacific Railroad. The Court was correct. This was no ordinary condemnation. What the District Court faced below was a government entity seeking to condemn property that already had been made available for its use through a voluntary agreement. In response to that unusual situation, the Court crafted a narrow holding and found that the CTA's proposed condemnation was facially preempted under ICTA. In particular, The court found that what the CTA was trying to do was impose terms for the use of a railroad joint facility, that the CTA was acting in, and I quote, a quintessentially regulatory fashion. And the court correctly concluded that this the CTA cannot do. Now, counsel talked about the statute, and this is an express preemption case, so that's the correct place to start. I'm not going to belabor the statutory language. Counsel cited it correctly. One important thing about the statutory language, the STB has found that that language, the language that Congress passed, was unquestionably broad and sweeping. And the question is, as counsel suggested, what is regulation? How is this condemnation regulation under the statute? The courts have applied a variety of tests. I'm not aware of a bright line test for whether something is preempted or not preempted.
Are you comfortable with, Mr. Andreoli, the 11th Circuit definition, which seems to have been adopted by a fair number of sister circuits?
The 11th Circuit has talked about managing or governing railroad operations and not remote or incidental. In the condemnation context, the STB has talked about routine and non-conflicting. The 9th Circuit has talked about, in the Auburn case, not specifically no need to draw a line. The 2nd Circuit has talked about the regulatory process itself. That's what's preempted. It doesn't matter specifically what regulation you're dealing with. I think under whatever test this court were to adopt, this condemnation is preempted. It's preempted on a per se basis, and it would be preempted on an as-applied basis if you needed to get there. 10 years after ICTA came into existence, the STB in the CSX transportation case came up with what's been described in the briefing as the per se versus as-applied analysis. Judge Dow found that that provided a particularly useful gloss on the case law, and it is a useful analysis. When the STB talked about that, and counsel referenced it, talked about two things: activities that deny the railroad the ability to conduct operations on the one hand, or activities that interfere with the STB's matters directly regulated by the board, the STB's jurisdiction. When you find enough evidence, when you look at a situation and there's enough evidence presented to tell you that it falls into one of the categorical categories, that's as far as you need to go. You don't need to get to the as-applied analysis. When you get to the as-applied analysis, that's the preventing or unreasonably interfering with. That's looking at a broader set of facts, and the STB, for example, did that recently in the Norfolk Southern case, the 2010 case, where they found preemption. And there's some similarities between that case and this case.
Assuming, then, and I'm not sure how this lease is perpetuated, the terms are perpetuated. There may be a separate agreement. There may be something else. I don't quite understand how that would happen in condemnation. But should that happen, and you have all the same terms, what does the railroad lose in the event of a condemnation?
Judge Dow addressed that question directly, and he said he didn't need to reach it because it's not true, because this condemnation and what is proposed through this condemnation is not coextensive with or in any way similar to the party's current relationship. There are two critical elements of the current relationship that the CTA is trying to take away. One is Union Pacific's remedy. Union Pacific can evict the CTA right now.
One is what?
Remedy, Your Honor. Union Pacific's remedy. Union Pacific is a landlord. It has a remedy. Its remedy is to evict the CTA if the CTA doesn't perform. And the lease contains a variety of terms and conditions for the use of Union Pacific's railroad operating property and for Union Pacific's control over that property. Your Honor, there was a question about more activity on the CTA side. Union Pacific has a remedy right now. This is part of Union Pacific's east-west main line. It is one of the most intensely trafficked components of the entire Union Pacific Railroad. Union Pacific can evict the CTA under a variety of circumstances if the CTA doesn't perform. It's not a hypothetical remedy. I suppose every tenant would prefer to have the eviction remedy available to a landlord as hypothetical. It's not. It's real. It was bargained for in the first instance. That goes away. The second thing that goes away is Union Pacific takes the property back when the CTA leaves. Again, the CTA has posited that that's hypothetical. It could never happen. If you actually look at the facts and circumstances associated with the use of this property and the CTA and the Union Pacific, it's far more likely that Union Pacific will use that component of the right-of-way in the future than the CTA. Union Pacific has been operating on this stretch of line. and it's in the record since 1848. Union Pacific uses the entire width of the right-of-way everywhere on this part of its railroad, but for this 2 to 3 mile stretch where the Union Pacific has allowed the CTA on its property. If you look at this, and Your Honors asked some practical questions, how did this come up, a rent dispute? Union Pacific voluntarily allowed the CTA on its property in the late 1950s, early 1960s. The railroads weren't doing well at the time. We don't know why. There's nothing in the record to describe exactly what the negotiations were. But the lease itself is pretty good evidence of what Union Pacific and the CTA understood. Union Pacific would, at some point in time, come back to this property. Union Pacific reserved all of its rights with respect to control of this property. Fast forward to today. The railroads are, the Economist published an article last year. They said American freight railroads, most profitable, most efficient railroads in the world. Union Pacific, it's in the record, given the opportunity, would use this property, the entire width of this property today, could use it. Union Pacific isn't taking steps to evict the CTA because the CTA, based upon the conditions of the lease, has been a good neighbor. That's what has happened. But that doesn't suggest that Union Pacific doesn't need this property or ever intended to forego its rights to retake this property. Now, condemnation cases. There's about a dozen. There's actually 13 that I'm aware of, reported decisions dealing with condemnation in the preemption context under ICTA. The STB in particular is a good place to look. This is the agency that administers the statute. The STB has found that condemnation can be a form of regulation. That's the Lincoln case from 2004. It's recognized that condemnation can be the most extreme form of control over a piece of property. That's citing the Marshfield case from the Western District of Wisconsin. It cited Marshfield twice in its decisions for the per se category of preemption.
Were any of these cases, that the 13 that you cite, had involving a lessee exercising power of condemnation?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor. What the CTA has said that there, specifically on the condemnation front, CTA has agreed there's no blanket rule that any eminent domain action against a railroad is impermissible. It's not necessarily preemptive. That's from the Momi case and the Norfolk Southern case. What the STB has repeatedly held is that a routine, non-conflicting use is okay. And there's an interesting way to look at this. The Momi case, which is cited frequently, is effectively a per se case the other way. Momi involves a routine at-grade crossing. The CTA declined to exercise its jurisdiction, didn't really hear the case, looked at the case on its face, and said, this is routine. This is something that happens all the time. We're not going to pay attention to it. If the STB can do that in a routine circumstance, it seems to me that this court, just as Judge Dow did, looked at this extraordinary proposed taking. The STB has recognized that taking an active railroad property, and remember, the CTA is taking its portion of the bridges. The bridges, there's 23 bridges over this right-of-way that we use. That's extraordinary. The STB and this court could very well look and say, this is categorically preempted, just as Judge Dow did. For what it's worth,
has the STB ever been invited to intervene in this lawsuit?
Offer no, Your
its
Honor.
Position formally on what it would
No, and Union Pacific would have no objection if this court were to look to the STB for guidance in this case. For what it's worth, I'm aware of 13 reported decisions, STB and the courts, on the preemption issue as it applies to condemnation. 14, if you count the Eighth Circuit's decision affirming the STB in Lincoln. Of those 13 cases, 8 found that the condemnation proposed was preempted. Of those 8, 5 found that the condemnation was per se preempted. The ones that were allowed, the ones that went forward, involved an at-grade crossing, a temporary construction easement, a recreational trail which was 25 to 50 feet away from the rail line, and an access road that was 275 feet away from the rail line. And what the CTA has argued is, and it's a false premise, and I think Judge Dow recognized this, just because ICTA does not categorically preempt all condemnation, it does not mean that no condemnation is categorically preempted. Because if that's the case, the exception swallows the rule. There is no per se test as applied to condemnation, and the STB has never agreed with that. There are two examples or thought exercises that demonstrate this I think, unequivocally. First one is, what if the original transaction between Union Pacific and the CTA were taking place today? Union Pacific occupied the entire right-of-way at that time. There were two tracks. Two tracks of Union Pacific's were moved, relocated, in order to accommodate the CTA. That was done on a voluntary basis, and the STB in the Sacramento decision talked about the fact that when a railroad makes its property available on a voluntary basis, it doesn't invoke the STB's jurisdiction. Is there really a serious argument that the CTA today could forcibly divest Union Pacific of that entire right-of-way, the way that Union Pacific voluntarily allowed that property to be used in 1960? What Judge Dow recognized and what's true is that the outcome can't be different because Union Pacific already has made that property available to the CTA on a voluntary basis. Because if the outcome is different, if Union Pacific or any other railroad waived its protections made available under federal law by voluntarily allowing a third party to use a piece of railroad property, then the railroads, which are among the largest landowners in the United States, couldn't lease property on a long-term basis when that made sense. And if they couldn't do that, it doesn't make sense. It makes no economic sense, and it makes no policy sense. Another scenario. What if there were no condemnation here? No condemnation at all. And that may be a better way to look at what the CTA is trying to do anyway. You know, we talked about the fact, if it were true, and Judge Adele recognized that the CTA were asking for exactly the same thing, then I have no reason to be here talking with you today. It's not the same. So looking at what the CTA is trying to do, it's asking the state to allow it to rewrite the terms under which Union Pacific, the CTA and Union Pacific, use this property, because it's not just a one-way street. It's not just taking away Union Pacific's control. It's imposing obligations on Union Pacific for the use of this property. And the state and the CTA, through its state authority, can't do that.
Under the present lease, I assume if the CTA doesn't pay its rent or all of its rent, I assume that's an event of default of some kind.
Yes, Your Honor.
And I asked previously, if the government intervenes to some extent by withholding funds, for example, to pay for, whatever subsidy, I don't know how much government money is involved, or state, federal, city, I don't know. But there are problems in budgets at every level, and there are arbitrary reductions. In the present case, if the government cut off a substantial amount of money, causing them not to be able to pay the full rent, would that be an event of default when it's, you know, they're forced to do it or something?
If the CTA did not pay its rent, it would be an event of default. The lease provides, and I can't quote them, an opportunity to cure what you might typically find in a lease. But it would be an event of default, and Union Pacific would have the right under the lease to evict the CTA and to retake that property for its use. Important item about this piece of property. Union Pacific operates here under the authority of the STB. Now, the Union Pacific's use of this property actually preceded the ICC, but that jurisdiction rests in the STB. Union Pacific has common carrier authority to operate on the width of this right-of-way. When the CTA leaves, Union Pacific, without any further action, may operate on that property. And that's why it's not the kind of property that the CTA can take or subject to restrictions that suit the CTA but are harmful to the railroad.
Now, you suggest that the railroad was at least implying an agreement that a lump sum payoff, or whatever you want to call it, buyout, might be acceptable. I guess there was some preliminary negotiations of something around $25 million or something.
The numbers are not at my fingertips. What Union Pacific was willing to discuss with the CTA was a lump sum payment of the rent. In other words, we have an agreement, a lease with the CTA, where the CTA pays us monthly for the use of this property. What Union Pacific, as a profit-making entity, was willing to discuss was simply front-loading that rent and taking a payment now, which the parties would have to work through and discount and come up with the economics of it, but say, we will accept this lump sum now in lieu of monthly payments over whatever period of time we're going to do this.
The lump sum would be a designated time period.
I think you would have to come up with a. You would have to come up with
the higher the amount, the longer the term, I suppose.
I think the accountants and the economists would have to look at it between the two parties, and it would have to say, well, this is fair. This is, and if you do that, by the way, whatever lump sum that is, that lump sum is not something that the rail would likely would refund. This would be an amount the parties would agree on. And to the extent the CTA, as Your Honor suggested, the CTA, I mean, it's in the record, the CTA has considered closing this line in the 1990s for budget reasons. The CTA has closed other, this is public knowledge, the CTA has closed other lines since World War II, lines open, lines closed. In the event the CTA entered into a lump sum payment and it turns out that 10 or 15 years from now, or 25 years from now, or 50 years from now, the CTA no longer had the capacity or it no longer made sense or was in the public interest to operate this line and closed it. If the calculation the parties had done contemplated a longer period, that money would be forfeited. But that's a discussion about a deal that didn't take place. Your Honor's also talked about remedies. The city of Creed, the city of Lincoln, both went to the STB. One of them had a situation with a right-of-way. One of them had a situation, as I recall, with a zoning ordinance that affected a railroad right-of-way. And they went to the STB, and they said to the STB, as the declarant, am I entitled to do what I want to do? The CTA had that opportunity, but it decided not to do that. It decided when it was unable to resolve the rent dispute to take Union Pacific's property. And what Judge Dowd did was correctly say that that remedy, that state law remedy, or that is not available to you. Now, in conclusion, Your Honors, this was a modest ruling. Judge Dowd did not hold that any condemnation is per se preemptive, and I'm quoting, irrespective of the scope or impact of the condemnation. The court didn't say that. That's not what the opinion says. That's not the court's holding. It's inconsistent with the analysis the court ruled. What the court said was that the CTA's extraordinary proposed taking is categorically preempted because it would directly conflict with the exclusive federal regulation of railroads. The court also found that it was an unreasonable interference with Union Pacific operation. This is a right-of-way where the CTA is within 5 feet of Union Pacific. You have an electrified rapid transit system, a diesel railroad, 100 trains a day running along this gauntlet. There are very specific safety concerns associated with this that Union Pacific's loss of control would affect. The district court's opinion.
But are they safety concerns, Sandra? I mean, they might run a different type of car, or what would be the safety?
No, Your Honor, this goes to the conflicting use. Is this a conflicting use? That's what the STB has talked about. All right, and just an example, there's three tracks, and so we'll call this track number three, which is the track that's closest to the CTA. Union Pacific, typically, when it does a track inspection, and it's going along the track, one of its other trains comes along, it will exit to what it calls the field side. In other words, to get to a safe place. In order for Union Pacific's workers, employees, to get to a safe place, they can't exit to the field side. You have an electrified rapid transit line there. They have to cross two tracks to get to a point of safety. Railroad 101, you don't cross tracks unless you absolutely have to. That's an incredibly unusual situation, and it's not a comfortable situation crossing two tracks when you have 100 lines a day running through there. It's a conflicting use. Another example, Union Pacific always takes ties out to the outside, which on track three would be towards the CTA. Can't do that here, so it takes the ties out to the inside. That means we're fouling, which is a railroad term, we're blocking two tracks. You have two tracks that are blocked because of the presence of the CTA. The safety concerns here go to the conflicting use. This is a conflicting use. The fact that the CTA was voluntarily allowed on this property 50 years ago doesn't make it non-conflicting.
Who, under the lease as it now exists, regarding those various vignettes that you've described, how are those handled currently? In other words, if there's a change in tie removal, does the Union Pacific deal with the CTA in a certain way? I mean, do you announce that now you're doing tie removal for a certain period? I mean, what is the relationship almost on a daily basis with the CTA?
The relationship on a daily basis is pretty separate, Your Honor, as I understand it. the parties have been operating alongside one another for a long period of time. There's an example in the record of one incident where the CTA did something wrong, and there was a concern. But for the most part, as I said, the CTA has been a good neighbor. That doesn't make the CTA a non-conflicting use, but they've been a good neighbor. In conclusion, Your Honor, the district court's opinion, well-supported, narrow, and we would respectfully request that this court affirm the district court. Thank you, Your Honors.
Friedman?
Mr. Andreoli adverted to the close proximity, the operational concerns. He mentioned in his argument that the CTA is imposing terms or taking away control, and all that or takes control of the bridges, for example. All that would not occur because the CTA, in its own words, is limiting what it's acquiring. It says the property sought to be condemned is not the fee interest in the property, but a perpetual easement upon such property that is coextensive with the lease. In acquiring the easement, the CTA shall succeed to its obligations and shall have the benefit of its rights as are now in effect between the lessor and the lessee, pursuant to the terms and conditions.
About the infrastructure. 5 years out, one of the bridges has to be attended to. Under the proposed condemnation, would there be any difference in who decides or who funds that kind of construction?
None at all. The terms and conditions would remain the same, and the as it is now, CTA is required to pay whatever the capital costs or maintenance costs are. It's the railroad that maintains the entire right-of-way, both sides, maintains the bridges, and the CTA pays its 40% of the cost, and the railroad does it. So that is not proposed to be changed at all. So the
could it be changed by the CTA if the condemnation?
Not under the terms of this condemnation. I suppose if we condemn the fee, that would be a possibility. But that's not what we're condemning or proposing to condemn. Whether to answer just Judge Mannion's question, whether this was under discussion prior to this, certainly at page A317 of the appendix, the railroad says, talking about $14 million, this is the amount we would recommend to the Union Pacific Railroad Company senior management should the CTA request a purchase of a permanent easement. Please advise if the report has been completed and when we might discuss the lease revaluation or possible purchase of a permanent easement. So that was certainly under discussion prior to this time. I'd like to address another of Judge Mannion's questions, and that is, what does the railroad lose? And it seems to me that's an important consideration. What does the railroad lose as a result of the proposed condemnation? It would lose the right that Mr. Andreoli spoke of reacquiring these surface rights in the future. CTA is proposing to make it permanent. It does not want to risk the loss of these rights should it fail to pay rent or the landlord-tenant remedies. There are certainly other remedies, but it is acquiring the permanent right, just as the rights today are perpetual. So the railroad, in fact, does lose the right to regain this. But the question is, what is it losing? There's testimony in the record that it would like to have it. It perhaps has a need for it, or it did at the time of the testimony. But what's important is there's no specific plan, no concrete plan. They don't have any plans, and the witness was very frank in his deposition. He said, we don't have any plans because we don't know when, if ever, we would get it back. It's something like a lottery ticket. I'd love to get the money. I have a need for the money. I know what I could do with the money, but whether I would actually win the lottery is a different question. So there is, I presume, a way of calculating what that risk is of getting the money from the lottery ticket, but is that a specific loss? Or to put it another way, what would a person pay or what would I have to accept for that lottery ticket? There's a concrete, or there's a some possibility of winning the lottery, but it is so remote, so small. In fact, a lottery ticket has a specific chance or risk attached to it. You can't even say that about the possibility of the railroads regaining this property. It would only occur if the CTA did not run passenger transportation over this line, or after 2042, if either party did not run rail transportation over the line. So clearly that is given up by the railroad if the proposed condemnation goes through, but what value does that have to the railroad? And more importantly, to the question before the court, is the loss of that thing, and that's the only loss that's going to occur here, is that loss a impermissible regulation of rail transportation? And we think the answer to that is pretty clear.
In the event that this were to be preempted, does this then go to some process before the STB?
Well, we haven't crossed that bridge, and we believe that if it is preempted, preemption does not mean prohibited. Preemption means it goes to the Surface Transportation Board. But we think that the evidence that we presented is in the summary judgment is compelling, that this would not constitute a regulation and interference with rail operations management or rail transportation. So for that reason, we're asking that the judgment below be reversed, or in the alternative, that if this court finds that there was not enough evidence or conflicting evidence, that the court below hear evidence on that issue.
Thank you, Mr. Friedman. Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.